Welcome, welcome to our second service today. I'm glad you're here. If you're a visitor, we welcome you. If you're watching online, we welcome you. We just tell you, if you're within range, it's better here. So I've got something I want to say before we get into the teaching part. This Wednesday, we're kicking off Roots. It's 12-week semester, starts Wednesday at 6:30, and you're invited. You're invited. You can come take a class. We go deep into the Bible study. The idea of roots is we're going to put down deep roots so that we can stand against the storms of this dark world. I'm doing a Bible study in this room on the book of Revelation, and here's what I want to say about that. If you can understand the main characters and events of Revelation, you can read Revelation and come to grips with it. And I'm going to go through the main characters and the main events of Revelation. For example, the first session is the church. The second one is the 144,000. Then you got the beast that comes from the sea, the beast that comes from the land. So I'm dealing with the characters so that you can then go and read the book of Revelation and then put the pieces together. There's also some other groups, small groups that are still available. You can check that out online. And I'm challenging you. Get into the Word. It's 12 weeks long, and then we'll take a break. It's 12 weeks, and I challenge you to come and participate in one of these. They're all great classes led by great teachers, so come and get involved. Okay, I find today's topic entitled to be unique and curious even for me, and I do some weird titles, and this, The Desolate Woman. It's an unusual title. It's an Old Testament mystery revealed. Now, I admit beforehand, I'm fortunate in this service that I've had one service to do this, and I feel a little bit better about it. It's a difficult mystery to reveal, but it is a mystery that I saw several months ago, and it was so powerful when I saw it. I was studying the Old Testament, and I saw it. I just saw this mystery. It's an Old Testament that is fulfilled in the New Testament that I wanted to share it with you. The Desolate Woman, where did that come from? And what does that have to do with us today in the church age? To understand today's sermon title and purpose, you go back to the Old Testament, to the Jewish people, to the called out children of God. So let's go back to the first Jewish man, the father of the Jewish people, the father of our faith. Abraham has that title in the New Testament. He's the father of our faith, the church. So let's go back and look at Abraham, Genesis 15:1. Sometime later, the Lord spoke to Abram in a vision and said to him, "Do not be afraid, Abram, for I will protect you, and your reward will be great." But Abram replied, "Oh, sovereign Lord, what good are all your blessings when I don't even have a son?" Do you see where he's going? I have no legacy. It's just me. And if I die, the blessings will die with me because there's no one to pass it down to. So, what good are all your blessings when I don't have a son? And since you've given me no children, Eleazar of Damascus, a servant in my household, will inherit all my blessings, all my wealth. You see his frustration? He's frustrated with God that, yeah, you've blessed me beyond measure, but I've got no lineage to pass it down to. I've got no legacy. I've just got a servant. I guess my servant's going to get it. You've given me no descendants of, and no son, so one of my servants will be my heir. And then the Lord said to Abraham, listen, no. I love it. No, that's not the plan. Your servant will not be your heir, for you will have a son of your own who will be your heir. And then the Lord took Abram outside it's not enough that he just said no. He takes Abram outside of his tent and he said, look into the sky and count the stars. So I kind of picture in my imagination Abram going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Count the stars if you can, and that's how many descendants you're going to have. And Abraham believed the Lord. There's the center of the faith that saves us. God spoke, Abraham heard, Abraham believed, received the truth, and it was credited to him as righteousness. It was counted to him as righteousness. Now, understand something. He's probably in his early 80s when this happens. And what's God said? You've got no son, but you're going to have a son. And you're going to have more kids. Not only are you going to have a son in your 80s, and actually we know at the end of the story he's going to be 100 when he actually has. He's going to wait for 25 years. He's going to wait. From his original counter at the age of 75, he's going to wait for 25 years to have the first star in the sky. Much less, you can't count them. Abraham believed. This is the beginning of God's story to redeem mankind and create a group of people from Abraham, from one guy, from one man, that will be called the children of God. But listen to Abraham's plea. Oh, sovereign Lord, what good are all your blessings when I don't even have a son? Since you've given me no children. God's answer is no. Your servant will not be your heir. It's not my plan. I have a plan. It's not your plan. It's not Sarah's plan. It's my plan. You will have a son of your own who will be your heir. God is going to cause Abraham and Sarah to have a son. This will be a supernatural act of God. No man can do it. No woman can do it. No person can do it. Only God can do it. Abraham will be 100. Sarah will be 90, and they will have a son. It begins with Abraham. And God is going to remove. Can you see the shame and remorse in Abraham's conversation with God? He's frustrated that I have lived under your blessing, but your blessing did not include a son to pass my lineage, my legacy to. It started with me. It's going to end with me. He's frustrated. And what story begins, God's going to remove the shame and the sadness of Abraham because he is unable to bear children through his wife, Sarah. But God will also remove the shame and the sadness of Sarah. And this is the basis of today's sermon title, The Desolate Woman. If you look up the original language of the word we translate desolate, it is defined as to be alone and left lonely. So desolate is to be alone and to be left lonely. The mystery that I'm trying to reveal today that I saw when I was studying the Old Testament will be revealed through Sarah, the desolate woman. The desolate woman describes any woman, listen carefully, it describes any woman in the Old Testament, in the ancient Jewish culture, that was unable to bear children. Now pause in the story for a moment. I want to do something for everyone listening today. I want to be sensitive today to the women who are in the audience or maybe watching online who are unable to bear children. And the beginning part of this message might be really hard for you. And I'm asking you in love, stay with me. Stay with me because there's a blessing in the end for you. There's something really big for you. So you got to stay with me. So as I start going through this, you might want to shut down because this desolate woman thing is you. You stay with me. You'll find the blessing toward the end. Bearing children in that day was their treasure. And to be unable to bear children was considered shameful It was to bear the reproach of God. And let me take it a step further. Read the Old Testament. It was like you were under a curse. And they directly connected the curse, unable to bear children, unable to have the fruit of the womb. They considered it to be a curse from God, that God is cursing us. And actually, there were cases when that applied, that God shut off the fruit of the womb. He did that. This was their culture. And by the way, can you see how far our modern culture has drifted away from those roots? If in that day it was a shame and a reproach not to be able to bear children, many today see children as a curse instead of a blessing, as something that stands in front of or in the way of a fruitful life. In that day, it was the fruitful life. And today, in many cases, our culture looks at children as the obstacle to a fruitful life instead of the definition of a fruitful life. We have flipped it upside down, reversed the order. So, God has promised Abraham to have a son from his wife, Sarah. Let's fast forward three chapters in this life of the desolate woman, Sarah. Abraham has another encounter with the Lord, and the Lord asks Abraham. They're standing outside of the city of Sodom, which will very soon be destroyed, and this conversation begins. Chapter 18, verse 9. "Where is Sarah, your wife?" the visitor asked. "She's inside the tent," Abraham replied. Then one of them said, "I will return to you about this time next year, and your wife, Sarah, will have a son." Sarah was listening to the conversation from the tent. Now stop with me for a moment. I can't help it. I've got a vivid imagination. When I read this, I see Sarah crunched down inside the tent like this. Now, Abraham is having a conversation with the Lord outside the tent, and she can hear the conversation. Do you know what went through my mind when I read that verse just recently? I thought when I was growing up, my grandmother, by the way, her name was Sarah. My grandmother had a phone in her bedroom beside the bed. It was black. It was one of those rotary dial ones. And when you picked up the headset, the button that lifted up, it had two notches. Some of y'all know where this is going. We lived on a party line. It was an eight-party line, which means eight people can be on that same call. You might get three short rings, and that's you, or three long rings, and that's somebody down the road. Well, I would walk into the room, and my grandmother would be sitting there like this on the phone, but she's only got that first notch activated. Do you understand the notch? When you pick up the phone, it only goes to the first notch on that phone, and you can hear them, but they can't hear you. Now, the idea was that so that you could actually pick up the phone and see if anybody was on the line. You could use it if it's empty. If somebody's there, you would hang it back up. But if you picked up the phone and pulled it up manually, then they can hear you. So I would all the time, I would come in and say, "Grandma, you're on the phone?" She said, "No." She's listening. And she knew everything about everybody in our community. And her name's Sarah. Her name's Sarah. So that's what I thought. And there's a little bit more to the story. You know what the rest of her name is? Sarah Alice Cooper. Now, I want to tell you, do you know what it's like to grow up in the 70s when your grandma is Alice Cooper? Some of y'all don't get that. You're too young. So back to Sarah. She's in the tent, and she's overhearing what? She's going to have a baby. 1 year from now, she's going to have a baby. Abraham and Sarah were both very old by this time, and Sarah was long past the age of having children. Verse 12. "So she laughed silently to herself and said, How could a worn-out woman like me enjoy such pleasure, especially when my master, my husband, is so old? Now at this point, what, she's 89, he's 99. Then the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? Uh-oh. Why did she say, can an old woman like me have a baby? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return about this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Uh-oh. And Sarah was afraid. She's still listening. Are you with me? She's still listening. Sarah was afraid, so she denied it, saying, I didn't laugh. Bad move. But God said, the Lord said, no, you did laugh. Good time to hang up the phone, right? Hang up. Sarah has come to the conclusion that she will forever be a desolate woman. She's concluded in her mind, I'm now 89 years old. This is not possible. I am a desolate woman without children. She even laughs at the idea that she and her old man husband can bear a child together. Remember, this entire covenant promise of God, I'm holding it up, this entire covenant promise of God is based upon Abraham and Sarah having a son. Are you with me? This is it. It's the centerpiece of the story. Abraham and Sarah must have a son. So let me put it another way. The entire covenant promise of God is that he will come and he will supernaturally change the life of a desolate woman. You got to get this. This is the key to understanding the mystery. That a supernatural God will come and change the life of a desolate woman, Sarah. This is the mystery. This is not just a story about physical limitations of the human body. This is a spiritual picture. This is the mystery that I want to reveal today. Genesis 21, verse 1. The Lord kept his word and did for Sarah exactly what he had promised. She became pregnant. She gave birth to a son for Abraham in his old age. This happened at just the time God had said it would, and Abraham named their son Isaac. 8 days after Isaac was born, Abraham circumcised him as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born, and Sarah declared, God has brought me laughter. All who hear about this will laugh with me. Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse a baby? Yet I have given Abraham a son in his old age. In the ancient Jewish culture, the Jewish women considered themselves to be desolate, alone and left lonely, a tree without fruit, if they were unable to bear children. It was the culture of that day. Again, I want you to consider how far our modern culture has come from the Judeo-Christian roots. How our culture today views children versus how God views children. Radical feminism has transformed our culture into something totally different. The word that's out there a lot today is reproductive freedom, but reproductive freedom doesn't reproduce. It's countercultural. Now, in our current culture, birth control and abortion allow the freedom, real freedom, to pursue real fruitful life. Nobody wants to say it out loud, but I will. Now, birth control and abortion gives people freedom to pursue a real fruitful life, unburdened by children. Can you see how huge a difference there is between that culture, the Judeo-Christian culture, and ours today? What a gap. Now back to the story. This transformation from desolate woman to fruitful woman wasn't just an issue with Abraham and Sarah. And here comes the mystery. I wonder how many of you have ever even noticed what I'm about to reveal to you. What happened when the son of the desolate woman, his name is Isaac, grew up and got married? What happened? Isaac's wife, Rebekah, also became a desolate woman. Wow, what a coincidence. Or is it not a coincidence? Is it providence to reveal God's unique plan for his people? The mystery is going to be revealed. Let's go to Genesis 25, 19. This is the account of the family of Isaac. Now, Isaac's the son born to Abraham and Sarah when he was 100. This is the account of the family of Isaac, the son of Abraham. When Isaac was 40 years old, he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean, from Padan Aram, and the sister of Laban, the Aramean. Isaac pleaded with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to bear children. Now understand something. This story begins with God telling Abraham to go outside your tent and go start counting stars. That's how many children you're going to have. But Sarah, she can't have children unless God comes. And then you got Rebekah, the next generation. She can't have children either. Is there a problem or is this the mystery? The Lord answered Isaac's prayer. Rebekah became pregnant with twins. But the two children struggled with each other in her womb. So she went to ask the Lord about it. Why is this happening to me? She asked, and the Lord told her, the sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, the two nations will be rivals. One nation will be stronger than the other, and your older son will serve your younger son. So who's inside of her? These twins. Supernatural birth is about to happen again. Why do I call it supernatural birth? Because she's the desolate woman. She is unable to have children until God comes and moves in her life. When he moves, it's an answer to prayer. Now she's got twins. Who are they? Jacob and Esau. Jacob will become Israel. Esau will become Edom. Two nations will come from this supernatural birth. The older son, Esau, will actually serve the younger son, Jacob. Edom will serve Israel. Your younger son, the younger son of Isaac and Rebekah, is named Jacob. God will change his name to Israel. And guess what happens? Are you ready? Guess what happens when Jacob gets married? Some of you are grinning because you figured it out. Actually, he marries two women, Leah and Rachel. So let's start with Leah, and guess what? She also begins as a desolate woman. Amazing coincidence, or is it a mystery that needs to be revealed? Genesis 29, 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, this is Jacob's first wife, he enabled her to have children. He, not Jacob, God enabled her to have children. So she's barren too. She's unfruitful also. The New American Standard Bible translates that sentence, the Lord opened her womb. So let's be clear, Leah is a desolate woman too. But Rachel, the other wife, could not conceive either. So you got Jacob with two wives and neither one of them can bear children. So Leah became pregnant. The Lord opens Leah's womb. So Leah became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She named him Reuben, for she said, "The Lord has noticed my misery, and now my husband will love me." What's her misery? She's a desolate woman in a Jewish culture. So she soon became pregnant and gave birth to another son, and she named him Simeon. For she said, "The Lord heard that I was unloved and has given me another son." Then she became pregnant a third time and gave birth to another son. She named him Levi. For she said, "Surely this time my husband will feel affection for me, since I have given him three sons." Once again, Leah became pregnant and gave birth to another son. She named him Judah. For she said, "Now I will praise the Lord." And then she stopped having children. By the way, well, who came from the lineage of Judah?
Jesus.
Is God in this story? Oh, he's in this story. It's the mystery, but he's in the story. Four sons, and she stops. He closes her womb. Now, for her sister, Leah. Rachel, she, listen carefully, like Sarah, like Rebecca, and like Leah, she is also a desolate woman. You have to stop in the story for a moment and think, why are all the women in the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob story barren? Why are they all desolate women? It's got to be a reason. It's got to be something in here. This is the mystery. Verse 1, chapter 30. When Rachel saw that she wasn't having any children for Jacob, she became jealous of her sister Leah. And she pleaded with Jacob, "Give me children or I'll die." Don't let pressure. That's pressure. Then Jacob became furious with Rachel and said, "Am I God?" He asked, "He's the one who has kept you from having children." Now jump down to verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel's plight and he answered her prayers and he's going to open her womb. Who's doing this? Who's doing all this? Is it God? He's opening these wombs at the right time and closing them at the right time. So God remembered Rachel's plight. He answered her prayers by enabling her to have children. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And here's her response. "God has removed my disgrace." And she named him Joseph, for she said, "May the Lord add yet another son to my family." And by the way, he did, and his name was Benjamin. Do you see a trend developing here? Anybody? Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob and Leah and Rachel. There is much more to learn about this Jewish culture and the desolate woman study. So I'm going to give you one more, and then we're going to move over to the main point and unlock the mystery. Her name is Hannah, and her husband is Elkanah. And she is also a Jewish desolate woman. 1 Samuel 1, verse 1. There was a man named Elkanah who lived in Ramah in the region of Zuph in the hill country of Ephraim. He was the son of Jeraham, son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuph of Ephraim. Elkanah had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah did not. Here we go again. Each year, Elkanah would travel to Shiloh to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of Heaven's armies at the tabernacle. The priests of the Lord at that time were the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas. On the days Elkanah presented his sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to Peninnah and each of her children. And though he loved Hannah, he would give her only one choice portion because the Lord had given her no children. So here comes the very mean and nasty other wife. So Peninnah would taunt Hannah and make fun of her because the Lord had kept her from having children. Year after year, it was the same. Peninnah would taunt Hannah as they went to the tabernacle. Each time, Hannah would be reduced to tears and would not even eat. Why? She, in the Jewish culture, is a desolate woman. She bears shame and reproach, and the other wife's not making it any better. "Why are you crying, Hannah?" the husband, Elkanah, asked. "Why are you not eating? Why are you downhearted because you have no children?" Why be downhearted just because you have no children? Now, I need to stop in a moment and say something about husbands to the wives. Sometimes we just don't understand. Okay? Elkanah is a great example of when you don't understand, just shut up because it's not going to get better. Let me prove it to you. All right? Are you ready? Let me go back. Why are you downhearted just because you have no children? He's not getting it. And then he makes it worse, and he says, "You have me." You thought it was funny, too. "You have me. Isn't that better than having 10 sons? No. No. Once after a sacrificial meal at Shiloh, Hannah got up and went to pray. Eli the priest was sitting at his customary place beside the entrance of the tabernacle. Hannah was in deep anguish. Why? She's a desolate woman. You got to keep remembering. Well, she's a desolate woman. Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. She made this vow, "O Lord of heaven's armies, if you will look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son." It's interesting to me that she's specific. I don't want a girl. I want a boy. "Then I will give him back to you, and he will be yours for his entire lifetime. And as a sign that he has been dedicated to the Lord, his hair will never be cut." The Lord heard the prayer of this desolate woman and gave her a son. His name is Samuel. Samuel would become one of the most prominent men of God in the Old Testament. Now, listen carefully. Why all this Old Testament Jewish desolate woman stuff today? Because it's a mystery that must be revealed in the church. And the key that unlocks the mystery is Isaiah chapter 54. It reveals the mystery. Isaiah 54 is God's prophetic promise. Listen, it's God's prophetic promise to future Israel. And you can also find a prophetic promise to the church, and that's why I'm preaching this message in the same chapter. But you would never understand Isaiah 54 prophecy to Israel or to the church if you didn't know about the desolate woman thing first. You would never understand it. Do you think it's a coincidence that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all the way down to the birth of Samuel, all experienced the desolate woman thing? All of them. Remember, the original covenant to Abraham was what? More children than the stars in the sky. Go out and count the stars. And yet everybody in this family can't have children. Why? You have to wonder, why? Or is there a spiritual shadow in here? Is there a mystery in the story that God wants you to seek and find? I'm convinced the answer is yes. A prophetic mystery for those who have eyes to see. And I want to say, I have prayed all week that you would have eyes to see and ears to hear. Because I get it. I get it. And I got it. And when I got it, it was so powerful that I spent hours and hours writing this message trying to make sure that you get it. And I'm hoping you get it, because here we go. The prophecy of Isaiah 54. This is a prophecy of future, and even today, for us, future Jerusalem, the real Jerusalem. But it's also a prophecy that reveals the way of God to the church. So it's literal future Jerusalem, and it is also a literal way for the church, after Jesus comes, to find our way into this covenant that God made with Abraham, that through you, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. So start counting stars. Through you, all the nations of the earth, not just the Jews, all the nations of the earth will be blessed through what? So we're in the story too, right? We're in here. Isaiah 54, verse 1. Sing, O childless woman. Who is she? You would never understand this if you just read this, unless you knew about the desolate women. Sing, O childless woman. She is Sarah. Okay, stay with me. Sing, Sarah, O desolate woman. You who have never given birth, sing. Why would you sing? Because something's coming. Break out into a loud, joyful song, Sarah. Why would I break into a loud, joyful song? I'm a desolate woman. Why? Because something's coming. O Jerusalem, you who have never been in labor, for the desolate woman, Sarah, now has more children than the woman who lives with her husband, says the Lord. The desolate woman, Sarah, now has more children than the woman who lives with her husband. Who was she? She was Hagar, the Egyptian handmaid. Sarah will have more children than Hagar. But that's not it. That's only a part of it. That's the physical part of it. Hagar, listen carefully. Hagar represents man's attempt to reach God's promises, God's covenant. And Sarah is God's sovereign way to reach his promises, his covenant. You see, the whole story of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar was that the spiritual war thought that there would be a way to get into the covenant of God, the promises of God, the blessing of God, the legacy of God, by doing it our way. And God was going to prove, you can never do it your way, because your way won't work. And I will open the womb and show you that I'm the only one that can make the way. I'll open the womb of that one and that one and that one and that one. And you'll know that I was the one who did it. And you'll know then that it's only through me that you will ever be part of that covenant. Hagar's way is that let's put a substitute Sarah in the story and we'll get the covenant promise. Won't work. Can't work. Why? It's not the promise. You're not a child of the promise. The children of God, listen carefully to the statement. The children of God, the legitimate children of God, can only come by God's power. Not man's conniving or man's power. And what are these covenant promises of God to Abraham? Through all the nations of the earth will be blessed. What are they? And why? Listen. When I read Isaiah 54, it says, sing, O childless woman. Why would I start singing? Childless woman, sing while you're desolate. Why would you sing while you're desolate? Because something's coming. Break out into a joyful song. Well, why would I break out into a joyful song? Because I'm a desolate woman. Because something's coming. Something's coming. Even though you consider yourself presently desolate, do you think this has any application to the church today? That right now it looks like the world's turned into darkness and we're the only ones left. We kind of look like Elijah under the broom tree. We're the only one, you know, the church seems, it looks like we're losing. The world's going into the darkness and here we are trying to hold up a light and it looks like we're losing. And he says, sing, rejoice. Why? Something's coming. So much bigger than anything you ever imagined. something's coming. Think of yourself as the Sarah. Think of yourself as the Abraham. It's hopeless out there. And what does he say in Isaiah 54? Sing, O childless woman, you who have never given birth. Break aloud into a joyful song. Why? For the desolate woman now has more children than the woman who lives with her husband. Why the singing? Why the rejoicing? Now the prophet Isaiah is telling you to add on to your house. Why? Do you see it? It's the next verse. I'm asking you, is the mystery unfolding? Verse 2. Enlarge your house. We've already got them singing. We've already got them rejoicing. Even though they're desolate, they're singing and they're rejoicing. Now he says, I want you to add on to your house. Build an addition. Spread out your home. Spare no expense, for you will soon be bursting at the seams. He's saying that to a woman who is unable to bear children. He's saying that apart from me, you're desolate, but when I come, fruit's coming. Your descendants will occupy other nations and resettle the ruined cities. Fear not, you will no longer live in shame. Don't be afraid. There's no more disgrace for you. You will no longer remember the shame. Can you see, Sarah? You will no longer remember the shame of your youth or the sorrow of your widowhood. I'll ask you again, do you see it? Do you understand all this rejoicing and adding on to your house? Now, you will never fully get it until here comes the next verse. And the next verse, quite frankly, when I read it, I wrote this sermon. The next verse, verse 5, for the Creator has become your husband. What? For the Creator, your Creator has become your husband. The Lord of heaven's armies is his name. He is your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of all the earth. Do you remember what Elkanah said to his wife Hannah? You have me. Am I not better than 10 sons? That didn't work, did it? What God is telling Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel and Leah and you and me is this. God's plan is that the Creator would become your husband. Now, women would more naturally understand that perhaps than men. So let me explain. This entire story is that but Adam and God were one. He was genealogically and spiritually one with God, and they became two. They were separated. And this entire book is God's plan to take two and become one again. Your Creator will become your husband. Where does that come from? And a man shall leave his mother and father and take hold of his wife, and two shall become one. This is the story of God. Your Creator will become your husband. And yes, the story goes back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all the way to Samuel and the desolate woman. All these people encountered the living God in their lives. And suddenly, when they encountered the living God, Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, all of them, suddenly, not just their womb began to bear fruit, their life began to bear fruit. Do you see the mystery? He removes their shame, and their life becomes fruitful. Why? Because the Creator became their husband. The Lord of heaven's armies is his name. The Redeemer, excuse me, the Holy One of Israel, the God of all the earth, has become one with you and your family. Isaac, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Samuel. You are no longer desolate. You are no longer alone. You are no longer left lonely. Now you have a future. Now you have a legacy. Now you have a family. Now you have a life. Now you are eternal. This is a mystery revealed through the physical, but actually is the spiritual. Without God, while you remain separate from God, you are the desolate woman. You are the desolate man. You have no hope. You have no legacy. You have no life. You have no future. Your fruit of your life is zero. History. God and his new creation will move out into eternity. You will be left behind in the darkness, forgotten, unremembered, zero, gone, nothing. You are desolate. And he asked you to make the Creator your husband. This is the legacy. This is the promise of God. Now you are no longer desolate. Now you are eternally fruitful and joyful. For your Creator has become your husband, and now your life has eternal fruit. It has a life. You have a life of meaning and purpose. And I want to ask you a question. In the middle of all of that, listen very carefully. Have you ever wondered why when Jesus is asked the question, Lord, what's it going to be like to be married in heaven? You know, they ask him that there was this guy, he had a wife, and he died and took another wife. Nah, nah, nah. Whose wife will she be in heaven? And Jesus answers the question how? In heaven, there will be no marriage and no giving in marriage. Do you ever wonder why? Because everyone in heaven's already married. The Creator has become the husband. So when I, over the past 30 years of ministry, I've tried to explain that there will not be marriage in heaven. You won't be married like you are now in heaven. And one group of guys, when I talk about that, they're like, oh. And there's another group of guys, and they're hallelujah. And I don't know which one you are, men or women today, whether that lets the air out or that pumps you up. I don't know which one, but I want you to understand this. The reason why there's no marriage and given in marriage in heaven is the Creator has become your husband. Do you understand that? It's a supernatural act of God that does this. And then the desolate woman and the desolate man, that's Abraham and Sarah both, are no longer desolate. Do you want me to show it to you in the New Testament? I'd love to. John 15, verse 5. This is Jesus. Jesus says this, I am the vine. So here I am, here he is over here. You are a branch. We're the branches, he's the vine. Those who remain in me, that's when two become one. When the branches connect to the vine, two become one. It's like a marriage. When the branch connects to the vine. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. Much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from me, you're desolate. But if you'll connect to me, there will be much fruit. This fruit he's talking about is eternal fruit. It's a legacy that lasts forever. It's Abraham knew that unless I have a son, unless you come and touch me and Sarah, all of your blessing will stop with me. It will not be transferred into the future. But when God touched Abraham and Sarah, when God touched you, and when God touched me, and this branch connected to this vine, suddenly my life is cast into the future. I have a legacy that goes out in front of me. It's into my children and my children's children, and not just into them. We have forever to experience the blessing. Because now time is no more. It's eternal. with me, Jesus said, your bridegroom. You will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you are desolate, alone, and left lonely. The Creator has become your husband. And do you see why it's so important to remain faithful to the bridegroom, Jesus, while we wait for the wedding supper? Do you? Do you understand that we are betrothed to the bridegroom? The marriage supper of the Lamb is coming. Hold on. Wait. Something's coming. Yes, we live in a land that looks desolate. Sometimes our situation looks desolate. It looks desperate. Sarah looked desperate. Abraham looked desperate. It said, sing. Rejoice. Add on to your house. Something's coming. 1 Corinthians 6:15. Don't you realize that your bodies are actually parts of Christ? Why? Two shall become one. Should a man take his body, which is a part of Christ, and join it to a prostitute? Never. Don't you realize that if a man joins himself to a prostitute, he becomes one body with her? For the scriptures say the two are united into one. The Creator has become your husband. But the person who is joined to the Lord is one spirit with him. We are one. If you are in Christ, you are one spirit with him. Two became one. The Creator has become your husband. Ephesians 5:31. In case you're wondering, where do I get the mystery? This describes the mystery itself. It's the church. The church is the mystery. As the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. This is a great mystery. That's going to come any second now. A man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. This is a great mystery, but it is an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. One more. Next one. So again, I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Why? Because this is the prelude to the ultimate wedding. Anybody listening? This is the preview of the ultimate wedding when the Creator becomes your husband. It is the mystery, which is the church. Finally, John the Baptist explains it so well. John 3:27, it says this. John replied, no one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. So many times you read that and you don't understand what the depth of what he just said. No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. God gave Sarah an open womb. Nobody else could do it on earth. And he gave Sarah and Abraham a son. And he wanted to make sure that we understood that man's effort couldn't produce children of God. So he closes Rebecca's womb and then opens it to prove that only he's the one that can do it. And he closes and opens and closes and opens so that we would know that he's the only one that can do it. No one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven. You yourselves, John continues, you yourselves know how plainly I told you, I am not the Messiah. John the Baptist says, it's not me. I am only here to prepare the way for him. And listen how he describes Jesus. It is the bridegroom that marries the bride. The Creator has become your husband. And the best man is simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. Therefore, I am filled with joy at his success, and he must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. Rejoice, O desolate woman, for the Creator has become your husband. John the Baptist said, I'm only here to prepare the way for him. But what if you don't? Here comes the turning point in today's story. This is all such good news. But here comes the turning point in the story. What if you don't? What if you're not ready? What if you reject his proposal to be one with the Creator? Do you have any part in this? When the invitation comes, when the Creator invites you to become one with him, do you bear any responsibility? Can you say yes? Can you say no? Well, let's answer the question through the scripture. Not your opinion, not my opinion, through the scripture. I'll ask you a question. When he came the first time, was Israel ready? No. When he came the first time, the Creator invited Israel to be his wife. They said no. What happens when you say no? Matthew 23:37. Jesus says this. Oh, Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets, stones God's messengers. How often I have wanted to gather your children together as a hen protects her chicks beneath her wings, but you wouldn't let me. You said no. And now look, what happens if you say no? And now look, your house is abandoned. Your house, your legacy, your future is abandoned and desolate. And you did it. And you did it. Now you are desolate, alone and left lonely. For I tell you this, you will never see me again until you say, blessings on the one who comes in the name of the Lord. In Hebrew, it's Baruch Abba B'Shem Adonai. So here's my closing. In the Revelation, there's a scene where the formerly desolate woman has prepared herself to meet the bridegroom. Formerly desolate woman. And the Creator has become her husband, forever her husband. I want you to look at the Revelation scene with me, and then I'm going to go back and read the balance of Isaiah 54 one more time and see how many of you can see the mystery revealed. This is the future for all those whose Creator has become their husband. So as I read this to you, I want you to understand this is the future for everybody who has become one with the Creator. One, not two, not desolate, together. No longer desolate. Revelation 21, verse 9. Then one of the seven angels who held the seven bowls containing the seven last plagues. And I need to give you some context. The context of this verse is the tribulation. The angel holds the seven last plagues. This is desolation on the earth. Where's the church? One of the seven angels who held the seven bowls containing the seven last plagues came and said to me, come with me, come with me. I will show you the bride. I'll show you the wife of the Lamb. The Creator has become her husband. So he took me in the spirit to a great high mountain, and he showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God and sparkled like a precious jewel, stone, like jasper, as clear as crystal. The city wall was broad and high, and 12 gates guarded by 12 angels, and the names of the 12 tribes of Israel written on the gates. There were three gates on each side, east, north, south, and west. The wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were written the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. I want you to notice one thing before I move on. Old Testament, the sons of Jacob, they're all listed. New Testament, the 12 apostles, they're all listed. The Creator became their husband. Come, I will show you the wife of the Lamb. They're there. Break out in joyful song. Something's coming. Do you know the future? The millennial kingdom of Christ and eventually heaven itself. Now I will read the ending of Isaiah 54. O storm-battered city, troubled and desolate. I will rebuild you with precious jewels and make your foundations like lapis lazuli. I will make your towers of sparkling rubies, your gates of shining gems, and your wall of precious stones. I will teach all your children, and they will enjoy great peace, and you will be secure under a government that is just and fair. Your enemies will stay far away. You will live in peace, and terror will not come near. If any nation comes to fight you, it will not be because I sent them, and whoever attacks you will go down in defeat. Do you remember when Jesus tells the parable of the 10 virgins? Let me wrap this up. Listen, I can't not tell you this. You remember when Jesus tells the parable of the 10 virgins, and it says at midnight there's a shout that comes out of heaven. What is the shout? Do you think it matters? Do you think it unlocks the mystery? What's the shout? Matthew 25, verse 6. At midnight, they were aroused by the shout. What's the shout? Look, the bridegroom is coming. Come out and meet him. That's the shout. And if you know the rest of that parable, the rest of that story, five were ready, five were not. Five went through into the wedding. Five were left behind, and they were left behind. They were lost. They remained desolate. Are you ready to meet him? Can you right now say for sure that the Creator has become your husband? Two have become one. Have you become one with the Creator, the bridegroom, one in spirit? If so, you are no longer desolate. You are no longer in disgrace. The bridegroom has taken all of that away. It doesn't matter what your present day circumstances look like. It doesn't matter if you see yourself like a Sarah. It's too late. It's too far. I can't. I have no meaning and purpose of life. It doesn't matter. He says to the desolate woman, sing a song. Break out in joyful song. Why? Because something marvelous is coming. The bridegroom has become your husband. There are only three recorded times in the Bible when Jesus weeps. The first is Lazarus's funeral. The second is the book of Hebrews when Jesus offers up prayers and tears to God to rescue him from death. And the third is what I will close with. And I'll ask you in advance, why is Jesus weeping? And is he weeping? Will he weep when we leave here today? Luke 19:41. As they came closer to Jerusalem and Jesus saw the city ahead, he began to weep. Why is he crying? How I wish today that you of all people would understand the way of peace. But now it's too late. You have crossed the point of no return. It's too late. And peace is hidden from your eyes. And before long, it'll happen in about 40 years after he says this. And before long, your enemies will build ramparts against the walls and encircle you and close on in on you from every side. Romans will come about 40 years after he says this and destroy Jerusalem, tear down the temple, and drag them off as slaves. They will crush you into the ground and your children with you. And your enemies will not leave a single stone in place. Why? Why? Because you did not accept your opportunity of salvation. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I longed to gather you as a hen would gather her chicks under her wings, but you would not let me, unless Chad, come on out for the invitation. You would not let me. And then when finally he's in Jerusalem, he says this, because you did not accept the day of your salvation. It was right in front of you. The bride, the bridegroom, your Creator asked you to become one with him, but you're too busy. You got your own plan. You got your own ideas. You'd like to be married to you. Your Creator has become your husband. The mystery is revealed. One more time. I don't know how good your marriage is right now on earth or how bad your marriage is here on earth. I can tell you this. Jesus himself says there will not be marriage and given to marriage in heaven. And it will be a perfect marriage. And it's not about male and female, not at that point. At that point, it'll be God and his children have become one family. It's called the children of God. It's forever. It's perfect. No more sin, no more dying, no more death, no more graveyards, no more ambulances, no more cancer treatments, no more separations, no more. It's the land of no more trouble. And the Creator, the only way this can happen for any human being on the earth is the Creator must become your husband. Jesus is the Creator. And he offers an invitation for you to be made one with him. But you must die to you for that to happen. And that's why it doesn't happen to everyone. You must deny yourself, take up a cross to follow him. And there's another spirit inside of you that resists that. And if you listen to that other spirit, you will die a desolate man or woman. You will die, the grave will swallow you, and you will forever be existing in darkness, in hell. And who did it? You did it. God didn't do it, you did it. So we're gonna sing a song. It's a powerful song, just like Lazarus. He raises us from the dead. And right now, if you're a desolate life right now, he wants to raise you from the dead. He wants to take away your desolate life and give you eternal life. And the Creator will become your husband. But you can say no. You can say yes. Say yes. The invitation's open.